This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with Warren Edwards from Wine for Spice. You guys make wine for consumption with chilies and...
Yes, it's wine to drink with spicy food generally. It's Indian, Thai, Malaysian. As you say, it's wine to drink with chilies.
A wee bit different for you guys, though. Most people talk about things like Gewürz, Traminers and Rieslings to go with spicy food. But the sort of wines you're doing are sparkling. Do you want to give us an idea of why you think that goes quite well with foods?
Well, we're actually coming from that classic Gewürz, Traminer, Riesling concept. And we're also coming from that equally classic lager and a curry Friday night concept. And we're putting the two together. So all our wines are lager cold and they're sparkling. But unlike a lager, which is gas injected, all our wines are through natural second fermentation. Yep. And one of our wines is actually 50% Muscat, which is a very close relative of the Riesling Gewürz Traminer concept.
It's quite spicy in its own right. Why did you go for a sparkling wine for Indian as opposed to maybe the more standard still Gewürz or Rieslings?
Yeah. Well, I used to drink, my favorite wine to drink with a curry was Torres's Viña Esmeralda, which is a lovely wine. And that's, it's 75 or 85% Muscat and 15% Gewürz Traminer made in Penedès by Torres. And that was my house home wine for curries. But I found it a bit too floral after the first glass and a quarter. So I wanted to cut that with something nice and acidic. So I experimented with, mixing a 50-50 Gewürz Traminer and Muscadet. And that was an improvement. And then I mixed it with... mixed a Gewürz Traminer or mixed Viña Esmeralda with cava out of the fridge. And I found that semi-sparkle, the average being semi-sparkle, just about right, because it cuts that floral Gewürz Traminer, floral Muscat, with something nice and acidic. And that was my first wine, Rani Gold, which is 50% Muscat, 50% cava blend, which is Macabeo, Parellada and Charolo, and then naturally second fermented.
You've got three wines. They're all sparkling. How does the sparkling work with the heat from the curries? What's going on there in the mouth?
Well, sparkling, well, first thing, it enhances flavor because the bubbles being natural bubbles through second fermentation, it increases the surface area. So there's more taste going on. And just think of a sparkling Coke and a still Coke. A sparkling Coca-Cola is much more refreshing than a still Coke. And again, they're all cold, so we've got no room temperature reds because a cold sparkling drink of any kind, be it water, Coca-Cola, or lemonade, is just much more fresh, refreshing than a still warm temperature drink.
I tried some of your wines earlier, and you gave me some peas that were quite hot, and they sort of snuck up on me. And I found the wines did actually take a lot of the heat out of the food. Is that what you're trying to do with your wines, just tone down the heat from the food?
Yep, that's the unique area aspect of the wines, because they were designed to be refreshing. And in terms of refreshing, well, we've talked about them being cold and semi-sparkling. But in terms of the fruitiness... we've got three levels of residual sugar. We've got a very dry and a quite dry and an off dry. And particularly the off dry, the Muscat blend, has got a good amount of residual sugar. It's about 22 grams per liter residual sugar. Now, if you're ever cooking something that comes out just too hot, just add some sugar or add some fruit, and the sweetness knocks the chili level. And that was my old Goan grandmother's trick. You just add some sweetness and it neutralizes the chili. And that's basic principle. So the sweetness and the residual sugar rises in across the range. So it rises in relation to the spiciness of the dish.
Okay, so if you've got a really hot, spicy dish, you want an off-dry, maybe medium-sweet sort of wine. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not medium-sweet. Off-dries, I would describe that. So up to about 20 grams per liter, but not much more, because then the sweetness starts dominating. And you really can see the difference before and after. So I always give people a taste of thing. It's a bit sweet, and then try the hot spices, and the reaction is quite telling before and after. So the sweetness locks into the chili into the sweetness. So in terms of football parlance, you've got your man-to-man marking. the sweetness takes out the chili, and the chili takes out the sweetness, and it calms the palate, and then you're ready for the next mouthful, be it a red Thai curry or a vindaloo or something Mexican.
See, I've always recommended to people, if you're eating vindaloos, to drink Cobra beer. But Cobra's not exactly sweet, is it? And your wines did really take a lot of the heat out of that particularly hot stuff you were sampling.
Yeah. Well, Cobra beer is an excellent lager, as is Kingfisher and Carlsberg and the whole range. But for me, I'm not very keen on lagers with a curry. And there are two or three reasons there. They're nice and cold, and they're nice and refreshing. And they've got bubbles, but beer lager of all sorts has got gas injected. So if it's through natural fermentation, be it champagne, which is lovely. Champagne's lovely with the curry, but it's a bit extravagant. So we're talking about a different price level. My wines are just good lagers. And in terms of lager as well, lager's got a lot of hops. So hops are bitter. And you get a lot more hops, obviously, in an English bitter. But lager's got hops, and hops are bitter. So I really don't understand and don't see why people drink lager with a curry. For me, if I was to drink, I sometimes do drink a beer with curry. But the beer I go for is a Bavarian or a Belgian or a Dutch white beer, wheat beer. And a wheat beer doesn't have the hops, doesn't have the bitter hops. So I find it much, and it's got this touch of sweetness we're talking about in terms of the wines I've produced. And so there I find a wheat beer, a white beer, is much more refreshing than a lager, a pilsner.
The bitterness, which is, in wine's case, tannins, you wouldn't recommend a tannic wine to go with curries at all. Is it because the tannins enhance the heat? Is that what's going on?
Yep. Well, there are two aspects. There's bitterness, which are perhaps unpleasant with something when you want something refreshing. But more than that, the tannins, tannin is mouth drying. So just think of stale tea or a really really heavy Shiraz or heavy Cabernet Sauvignon. The tannins dry them out. And that's just lovely with a good steak or a wild boar or whatever. But a tannin, in terms of in terms of wine, it's just not refreshing. So I don't want, we don't have any wines with tannin. We have a rosé, which is obviously 100% red grapes, and it's a Tempranillo and Grenache. But leave it on the skins for 18 hours, and so there are no tannins, because tannins are mouth drying. So everything in the range is mouth watering. So we've got mouth watering, good level of acidity, no oak, because oak actually clashes with cumin and coriander and ginger.
So how do you source your wines, and how do you distribute your wines? Obviously, you're targeting maybe some of the Indian curry houses, is that sort of thing? Is that your target audience?
Yep. Well, the target audience is the Indian restaurants, but not yet. So the battle plan is to talk directly to the end consumer. And we do a lot of shows. We do the BBC Good Food show in summer and winter. And we do a lot of country shows around the country. So getting people to taste it and drink it and tell their friends. So we do most of our business through shows and internet. And we're now selling through Waitrose in London and Cambridge and also Ocado. And eventually through Indian restaurants. But we don't want it to be in an Indian restaurant and then have to train the waiters to sell the wine, because we're actually training the customers, and we're talking to customers directly and get customers to pull the wine through the Indian restaurants.
Is it a bit like how Cobra Beer rolled out? Cobra Beer is like an English beer, isn't it? It's it was originally designed, though, for the Indian restaurants. Did they go through, they went through the restaurants first and then into the supermarkets? You're almost doing it in reverse.
Exactly. So directly opposite to what Cobra are doing. Cobra went from restaurant to restaurant and built up, they've got a wonderful following, wonderful brand, and Karen Billamore is now a peer of the realm. He's Lord Billamore. So he's done a wonderful job. But he and they went through restaurants first. And I sell through a few restaurants, but it's only on demand. I'm really working on building the brand through direct customer contact.
I must admit, the local curry restaurants around where we live, the wine list isn't spectacular, but the pricing is actually quite good. It's not one of the most reasonable pricings for restaurants in our area. So I always actually drink quite a bit of wine at the restaurants, because you can get some really good wines at a reasonable price compared to some more high-end restaurants. You land up paying a lot of money for the same wine. So maybe people should be looking at maybe at more wines when they're having their meals out at Indians.
Yep, yeah, certainly. because also my wines being semi-sparkling, they've got less gas, and also because they're naturally semi-sparkling, the gas bubbles are tiny compared with gas-injected lager. So just much easier on the body, and therefore there's more room for the Indian restaurant's food.
Hadn't thought about that. You talked about your wines. It sounded like a lot of them are being sourced from Spain. Is that where all your wines come from? And how do you run that end of the business?
Okay, yeah, they're all sourced from Spain. They're made from Spain. They're 5,000-liter tanks for each wine for a first blend, and then they're second fermented in sealed stainless steel tanks to give a very clean, fresh taste. We filter out the yeast. So these are our wines produced to our recipe. In terms of the wine blend, which changes from year to year depending on the season, really, on the heat, and also in terms of yeast. So we produce them. So and these first three wines are all from Spain. Now we're looking at a red semi sparkling from Italy, but that's much more difficult because I personally like a good red sparkling Shiraz with a hot curry. And there's some excellent wines. Bandrock Station is one of the cheaper ones. That I find excellent. But funny, I know Australians drink red sparkling Shiraz Christmas lunch with a barbie. But I actually can't stand red sparkling Shiraz with anything but a hot vindaloo, a hot meaty vindaloo. And I find it just too dominant with something bland. But with a meaty, spicy dish, because red sparkling Shiraz has got quite a bit of residual sugar, I really think it's excellent with a hot curry. Bit more of a problem because the market still isn't ready in the UK for red sparkling or red semi-sparkling.
We get a lot of people talk about that with me when I'm doing wine tasting. So they often ask me my opinion on red sparkling wines. And I always think this must be quite hard because one of the reasons, for example, in Champagne, they add red wine to white wine to make the rosé is because of tannins. You know, if you leave the skin in contact, you're going to get the colour, but you're also going to get the tannins. And we've been talking about how tannins and the heat come through. So do you have to fine out the tannins, like add things to collect the tannins so the wine has hardly any tannins? Is that the sort of process that you're looking to do for a red sparkling wine for a curry?
Well, there are a couple of things that do seem to, and I'm not a scientist, but and I've picked this up along the way, a couple of things that do seem to remove tannins. And one is residual sugar. So extra sweetness or dosage, as you have in sparkling wines, the extra dosage tends to counteract tannins. Yeah. So that's why if you look at all the red sparkling Shirazes, they've all got quite a bit of sweetness, 20-25 grams per liter, perhaps more, and that counteracts tannin. And the other thing that seems to counteract tannin is malolactic fermentation. And just try it in a glass. If you've got some still wine, really tannic wines, be it Shiraz or Cabernet Sauvignon or whatever, just add some really milky, semi-milky Chardonnay. And just as you find in tea, you add milk and sugar to tea and it removes the tannin. It reduces the tannin, removes the tannin when you add milk and sugar to a tea. In the same way, it seems to be. I haven't tested it scientifically, but if you've got a tannic red wine, and you add the Venus equivalent of milk and sugar. So in terms of milk, you add something, a milky Chardonnay, milky Semillon.
That's a wine that's had malolactic fermentation. So the real sharp malic acid has been converted to a lactic milky style acid, which is a lot softer and creamier.
Right, yep. The malic acid being basically apple acid, green apple acid, is through malolactic fermentation, MLF as some people call it, is converted to lactic, which is basically milky acid. And so whenever wine... most red wines actually undergo malolactic fermentation to some extent or the other. So the sharp green apple acid is converted to soft lactic, softer milky acid, and that smooths it out. So, but if you want to take that process even further, just get a buttery Chardonnay or buttery Semillon, and just add a dollop, 20%, half, 50-50, to... it's sacrilege doing it in the glass, and people, you've paid a lot of money, but just have a go.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there, Warren. Thank you very much for your time. That's been fantastic.
That's good. Yes, thanks very much.